A woman, no longer young, watched the coming of spring as she peered out through the dirty window of a train. She was alone in the carriage, travelling home to the country after an exhausting day in town. She was returning from the doctor's after yet another series of tests. For months now, she had been suffering from a strange dizziness ringing in her ears, an odd feeling of being off balance, of teetering on sponges when her feet were on solid ground. All this had been recounted to her neurologist for the first time months ago, while he listened from behind his antique desk. "I just don't feel as awake as I ought to," she had concluded.
You mean you feel drowsy? Your reaction time is slow."
"No, I just don't feel that my mind is clear. It's as if everything were muted or veiled. And sometimes I think that ringing in my ears will make me go out of my mind." The neurologist had made her walk around the room with her eyes closed and her arms stretched out before her. He'd made her twirl on one foot and stand on one leg, and then he'd applied electronic devices to her neck and her head. This had been going on for weeks. Today, he had said, "I think you'd better check into our clinic next week. We must probe further, but just to make absolutely sure, chances are it's nothing to worry about." Now she took a notebook and a pen out of her bag. She began to make a list of the things she would need to take to hospital. But she couldn't bear to think of it, and she closed her eyes. At that very moment, the train gave a jolt, and the pen slipped from her grasp. She opened her eyes and watched it roll into a corner. She bent down to pick it up. But just as she reached out, her fingers closed on nothing but the dirty floor. She'd missed her aim. A second time, she reached down slowly and deliberately, maneuvered her hand towards the pen with enormous concentration, retrieved it, and dropped it back into her bag. It was the doctor who'd called her attention to this strange new defect of hers.
"Does it ever happen that you misjudge distances when picking up small objects, or that while driving things seem very far away, and suddenly you realise that they're almost right on top of you?"
She had stared at him in horror.
"Oh, no, thank God. I haven't noticed anything of that sort."
But ever since he had mentioned this curious phenomenon 2 weeks ago, she had noticed that it did indeed happen to her, and with alarming frequency. She swatted a fly and missed it by a mile. She poured out a glass of wine and stained the tablecloth. Did it used to happen before? She couldn't remember. Now she decided to give herself a little test. She shook the contents of her bag out onto the seat. Then, one by one, she picked each item up and put it back into her bag. This time her aim was perfect. She could even do it with her eyes shut. She tossed the pen to the floor, bent over, reached out boldly, and retrieved it instantly. "There! You see? There's nothing wrong with me," she thought. She had just snapped her bag shut in defiance when the door opened and the conductor, a little toad-like man with protruding eyes, came into her carriage. She knew him well, though only by sight, since she was a frequent traveller on that line. As he asked for her ticket, he seemed embarrassed, and it was quite obvious to her that he had been watching her. Irritated, she flung her ticket into his face, and as she did so, she noticed that his trousers were half unzipped.
"All alone?"
he asked as he punched the hole. When she didn't reply, he frowned and pointed to her bag and said, "Be careful, madame. There have been gypsies on board lately."
"Perhaps you should come into the next carriage, where the other passengers are. It's warmer in there. Our electrical system isn't working properly today."
She declined politely and waited for him to go. But he just stood there, peering at her, his fly half open. Then he said, "Do you need anything, madame?" "I assure you that I am quite all right." After this cold rebuff, he withdrew. The train slowed as it approached a narrow bridge high above a torrent. Last week, the bed of the river had been caked and dry, with a parched islet in the middle where a few spindly clumps of vegetation persisted.
But now a flood of turbid water gushed through that swollen vein, menacing and joyous, swallowing the islet, except for a small stretch of sand where rags fluttered amid the broken branches. As the train inched across the bridge, something small and pink swirling below in the dirty water caught her eye. It was the head of a doll, decapitated and abandoned. The doll's head unlocked a memory of something lost and irreplaceable. Tender rubber limbs of a beloved toy scattered across the lawn. The woman savoured for a moment this childhood memory, then mechanically reached into her bag for a chocolate, unwrapped it, and popped it into her mouth. She smacked her lips with pleasure. Then looking up, she discovered that she was being observed by a very dirty, dark little boy. She was astonished. How had he got in without her noticing? She took out another chocolate and offered it to the child. After a moment's hesitation, he snatched it from her, thrust it into his mouth without unwrapping it, and then spat out the foil. "Not like that," she scolded. She took out another chocolate, unwrapped it with exaggerated gestures, as if instructing a monkey, and held it out to him. This time, he scratched her palm with a grimy nail as he grabbed the candy. "Ouch," she said, "be more careful." His only response was an impish grin. He wanted more, and this annoyed her. "All gone," she said, and shook her head. She expected him to leave now, but instead he sat down opposite her with a grave expression on his face. This was disconcerting. How could she get rid of him? Offering him money would only make things worse. The only thing to do was to ignore him. She began to leaf through a magazine, but the scene outside the window demanded her attention. Twilight lingered as a full moon rose, a corroded marble face shining above distant mountains. The boy, too, was attracted by this vision, and he stood up and pressed his dirty nose against the glass. She felt a strange sense of union with him as they admired the moon in silence. It was the first spring moon. For a moment, her doctor's reassurances came to mind, but they lost their meaning in the blanched moonlight. She contemplated its sightless alabaster eye and thought, "I am at your mercy now." How long had it been since she had wandered barefoot, unafraid, beneath a moon? But now the moon disappeared as the train lurched around a bend, and seconds later bounced back into view in the window across the aisle. Delighted by this reversal, the child laughed and ran to the other window. He looked out for a moment and then dashed out of the carriage. Alone again at last, she relaxed. She slipped off her shoes, propped her feet up on the opposite seat, and stared absently at the low-lying fields. Suddenly she saw something completely unexpected, a sparkling white dome in the distance. She peered closer. The dome seemed to be set within the square walls of a citadel. She was amazed by this sight, for she had never noticed it before. It vanished momentarily as the train cut through a small oak grove and reappeared, distinctly visible above a rise in the terrain as they emerged from the wood. Then once more a hill hid it from view. How extraordinary, she thought. Was it a monastery? A monumental cemetery? She would look it up that night on the map. Now the train rushed into a tunnel, and the carriage was plunged briefly into darkness. It came out again into the quiet green countryside and slowed gradually to a halt. She groped with her feet to slip her shoes back on, but couldn't find them. She looked under the seat and in the aisle. They were gone. "That boy has stolen my shoes while we were in the tunnel," she thought. "How could he have been so stealthy and so quick? What am I going to do now?" She contemplated herself,
a well-dressed, middle-aged woman in a pearl-grey suit with no shoes on. How ludicrous, she thought. She had to find the boy, if he was still on board, and get her shoes back. She stood up. The grit and grease of the floor penetrated her stockings as she made her way, stepping gingerly to the next carriage. The boy was not to be found there, nor anywhere. She was almost the only passenger left on the entire train, except for an old peasant snoring away in one of the darkened cars. In the very last carriage, she found the conductor dozing with a newspaper in his lap. He woke as she entered, and as he recognised her, he leapt to his feet and stammered, "What's the matter, madame?" "It would seem that my shoes have been stolen." He looked down at her stockinged feet and blushed. "I warned you, madame. It's filthy. You'll sore your feet." Saying this, he gallantly spread his newspaper out on the floor for her to stand on. She hesitated, and then stepped onto the newspaper. "I think my thief was a little boy. I've looked everywhere, but to no avail. Did you see him?"
"I'm afraid I saw no one, madame."
"Shall I go and have a look for him?" "Oh, he's probably long gone. Will we be stopped here much longer?"
"There's a delay up on the line. We're waiting for the signal," he said, unable to take his eyes off her feet.
"But, madame, there may be broken glass, and you will catch a chill." She cut him short. "I don't suppose you have any plastic bags around somewhere?" "Plastic bags? You know, shopping bags, to wrap my feet in." He considered this for a moment and then said, "Yes, of course. Perhaps I can find you something." Eager to be of assistance, he went off on his search, and she was left alone. Oh, how stuffy it was on the train, she thought. She tried the window. It resisted, but with a surprising burst of energy, she wrenched it open. Outside, the moon glittered in an unclouded lake of liquid cobalt. Here was a field showing no signs of life as yet, and beyond that stood a thicket of small trees. She realized that what she needed most was a stroll in the fresh air. She thought about wrapping the newspapers around her feet, but decided it was useless. She made her way towards the exit door. Finding it unlocked, she stepped down into the night, climbed over the tracks and headed towards the thicket. Her feet sank deep into the damp, ploughed earth. A wind was blowing now, sharp and chill, but not unpleasant, penetrating every pore of her body. Black wings flapped in the dark treetops. She felt herself breathing. No, never, never, never had she felt so awake, so alive.